Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Paul Rodriguez grew up near Los Angeles, California, and his life as a musician has taken him around the U.S., the Caribbean islands, Europe, and ultimately to New England, where he now resides and leads the Paul Rodriguez Band and Polarized Guru, a jazz fusion group. An early band, The Trends, signed with Capitol Records, and he has been the composer-arranger of the score for a Peanuts television special as well. His album of original music, More Roads Ahead, was released in 2018. Paul Rodriguez, welcome to Song Creating.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you. I hope I got all the facts there right. What's Polarized Guru?
It's actually an anagram of my name.
No kidding.
The only reason I came up with it is because I put my name in and said, you know, rearrange the letters and see what comes up. And Polarized Guru was one of those names. So I thought, oh, that's perfect. That's a great name for a band. So that's why I chose it. That's the only reason that came up. There was no great creative thing on my part. It was just some AI website telling me what it was.
No, that's brilliant. I love that. So you really cover a lot of genres in your music. And I think the Paul Rodriguez Band is kind of a more mainstream band, I think. Is that a proper way of saying it?
And mainstream, kind of, you know, cover band, we play restaurants in the area. And we've been doing that for the last 10 years.
But I'm curious about Polarized Guru and the jazz fusion genre, which is very different from your classic rock cover stuff. And I've seen you guys, and I mean, it's good music. It is true to form of the jazz fusion that I used to just revel in back in the 80s and 90s, if I recall, like the Jeff Lorber fusion and or early Jeff Lorber. Is that, I mean, where did that sound come from, or that desire to play that kind of music mixed with the other music that you were brought up with?
Well, that came from, you know, the first music I played with the band back in my high school days, and beyond that, we were playing a lot of funk and horn band stuff. So that was really kind of jazz fusion might be kind of where I kind of got started with in terms of arranging for bands and stuff like that, because even though the first band I had, we had was like a five piece, and we were not that good. We knew about five songs, and I think we did one gig, but we could do the songs we did were, you know, like Inagata De Vida, that one gig that we had, if we played that twice, it took up most of the time of our gig. and then we did White Rabbit and Light My Fire. And so it was, even then it was like, there were hints of kind of, something a little more than just, your basic pop rock. Then the next band that came along at the end of high school and then beyond for a few years was the Trend, which signed with Capitol Records. And that band was a horn band, Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Tower of Power.
Wow.
So, and I was the main arranger for that. I'm the one that took the vinyl records and would listen to the horn parts, you know, try and get the needle on the record just right, and try and listen to the horn parts and write it out for everybody. So I got very good at that. And then also did a little bit of the songwriting too. But the so that's where the jazz fusion came from, was all, you know, the funk bands and the horn bands. Jazz fusion is what saved me in the 80s. Because I didn't really like much of the songs from the 80s. And so I was listening to, you know, to Jeff Barber and Earth, Wind, Fire, and all these people that are you know, the soul and the funk and the jazz. And actually not so much jazz fusion as it was back then. Like Weather Report, yeah, I knew a few other things. But it did have an influence on me on the stuff that I did know. And I'm saying that because now that the Polarized Guru, the group that I play with now, the rest, you know, we've been together for about 8 years, and the rest of the guys in that band have really studied jazz fusion stuff, and so they know a lot more of that genre than I do. Although I, you know, I love all that music, and they keep introducing songs I've never heard before, but they're great songs. So. It's fun. We've been having a great time with that.
Is there a way to define jazz fusion? Not so much how it sounds, because I think you kind of know it when you hear it. But I guess when you're
right,
playing it, or when you're writing it, what is it that defines it?
Well, you know, it's, it can be pretty much anything. In fact, that's how I explain it when we play somewhere. I say, yeah, we are a jazz fusion group, which means that we can play anything we want because it's fusion. You fuse anything together.
Yeah,
we even play a song, a Finnish kind of a folky song, with Polarized Guru, and it fits. You know, the stuff that we play all kind of fits together in one cohesive concert, and people really enjoy that. They enjoy hearing different sounds. We'll have a few songs with a Latin beat, some songs with a jazz swing beat, and then some real classic jazz rock beats, and people love that. The variety of stuff that we do.
Are you interpreting songs, existing songs, or are you writing as well?
We do both. And over the years we have written, now we have more original songs than cover songs. And even the cover songs that we do, we give it our own special arrangement. Like for instance, we will do Led Zeppelin's Kashmir. But we do it our own way. It still sounds like Kashmir, but it's got some, you know, jazz funky things in there including a whole middle section where we are, which defines our group more than anything else as to the kind of stuff that we do. But it's we have some, you know, really good players in that group, and they all participate in the arrangement of some of it. What we call it is, in that group, when we make our own version of a song, we call it guru-izing. So we're going to guru-ize the song. That means we're going to give it our own special stamp and do it the way we want to do it.
That must be so much fun.
It is.
Having played in a cover band and having members of the band want to play it just so, and yeah. I've always wanted to take it out a little bit and make it our own, sometimes there's a little headbutting about that. It's always fun to take something different. Let's go back here. You grew up in LA. Your last name is Rodriguez. Was there some Latin Mexican influence in your musical life at that time?
Well, you know, in my musical life, no, but in my growing up as a child in L.A., my parents were actually both born in the United States, but their parents were all born in Mexico. So my parents were my dad was was English as a second language. I think my mother too. But they all learned English pretty well. By the time we were born, they were speaking English. My dad had a heavier accent, but they got the kids in my family, my brothers and I, were told to really learn English well, and so we did. We all were very good at English, and we didn't learn Spanish, so it's kind of weird, and it's kind of hard talking to like my grandmother. Back when she was alive, she she could only speak Spanish, and as kids could only speak English. So I kind of miss that, and actually I'm trying to make up for it now by learning Spanish at 70 years old. but I've heard enough Spanish in my lifetime to know a lot of words, and I know how you're supposed to pronounce them, and I could actually, if you gave me something to read, I could probably read like a native, but I don't know the meanings of all the words yet, but I'm getting there. I'm just using Duolingo and learning it, and I know a lot more Spanish now than I did even a couple years ago.
So
I grew up in a Mexican American community. It was very mixed, and there was it was a great town of Paramount in the LA County region, and I thought it was a great childhood. I grew up in Catholic schools, and had some great friends, so we were close, maybe half hour, 45 minutes away from Hollywood, which is a great place for us to kind of go down and cruise the streets of Hollywood Boulevard in the 70s. That was one of our favorite things to do. And also going to see some groups there, like at the Roxy. I saw Herbie Hancock there. Saw Chicago at the Whiskey. And so that's what I grew up with those groups playing on the radio, and the band I was in that eventually signed with Capitol Records. We were all just in real horn band enthusiasts, and so we had a great time. I went to 1 year of college after high school, and then we got offered a chance to do a tour over the summer, which actually we had to leave before our finals came up at the end of that first year of college, I didn't do that well. a couple of my teachers said, "No way, you have to take the test. We're not going to let you take it early." So I said, "Okay, I'm gone." I knew that this was a once in a lifetime opportunity. When you're, back then, you get offered a chance to do a tour, playing your music and other music, and it's just we all knew right away that that's what we wanted to do. And then we all kind of went back to college after we were done a few years later, but we gave it a shot.
And this was that era when horn bands were huge. I mean, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people don't know this. They played at Woodstock. They didn't make the movie, I think, but between them and Chicago, I mean, and Tower of Power, these bands were, I mean, Blood, Sweat, and Tears had a number of, I think they knocked the Beatles out of a number one place in the top 40. I mean, it was just massive how big they were. And I can't think of a horn band out there right now that is cracking into the top 40 off the top of my head, at least. But it was a big time. And you were young. You must have been 18, 19, just out of high school.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah, so we were having the time of our lives, and I knew that this once in a lifetime thing happening then, I was not going to pass up. I could always go back to college, but I could not always get a tour like that. So it was great.
So where'd you get your musical knowledge? To do all this scoring and everything?
I started learning guitar at the age of 10. I took lessons for 2 years. So that's how I learned to read music. And then after that, started playing with other musicians, like everybody else. You know, said, "Oh, did you hear the new Jimi Hendrix lick?" And then we would show each other, "Oh yeah, this is how it goes." And it was also just a very creative time for rock guitar players. Jimmy Page was out there, and all these guys are just, you know, tearing it up and doing things that were just so new that we all, you know, wanted to be like them.
The guitar lessons that you took at the time are different than guitar lessons now, where you're actually looking at manuscript writing of notes on a staff.
Yeah.
I don't think guitar is really taught that way very much anymore. It seems to be mostly tab.
Well, I don't think I saw, guitar tablature until like 5 years later. But when I was first learning, it was out of the standard Mel Bay guitar book lesson.
Exactly, right.
Book one, and you were playing Red River Valley, and ding 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 ding. But it was funny because I started playing. Yeah, my dad won this guitar at a poker game, and he had a friend who owned a music store. And so he said, "Hey, you want to learn how to play guitar?" And I said, "Well, let me think about it. It's going to get cut into my TV time. But I'll do it. I mean, maybe I can get to know some girls at that point." So I started taking lessons, but I didn't practice. And after a few lessons, the guitar teacher got really mad at me. And he cussed at me, and nobody had ever done that to me before. I got scared, so I went home and I practiced. I practiced for the next lesson, and I did fine. I did well, and then the next lesson I practiced and I did fine. And then I thought, you know, this isn't as bad as I thought it would be. I thought it was it's not that boring. It's actually becoming kind of interesting. And at the end of the 2 years of lessons, I was actually playing classical guitar pieces. Sight reading, and so it was a great thing to do to be able to learn music like that right off the bat.
It's amazing what practice will do.
Yeah, and then when I got into high school and needed to arrange for bands for the first band and also the horn band. I would ask my I was in band, of course, and I played trumpet. And I asked the music teacher, what do I do? How do I make this harmony thing with two horns go? And how do I write this? And how do I do that? And so he would show me. You know, so I kind of just ask questions, and he shows me what I should be doing. And then I got to know somebody else who knew a little bit more about that and how to arrange for horns. And I started listening to how Chicago was playing their stuff and how their voicings were just like if you wanted the power chord, you'd put your third on the top or whatever. It was really, and then I took some workshops here that. I even took a professional arranging workshop in Hollywood for a few weeks, and learned how the Henry Mancini method of orchestrating for arranging for orchestra. So I really was really getting into it.
Wow! Yeah.
I had to arrange for a band that had three. And sometimes four horns if I was playing trumpet along with them. It was great to be able to do that. Whereas, you know, a lot of guitar player friends of mine, you put a piece of music in front of them, they really couldn't do anything with it. So I gravitated to the musicians who actually knew how to read And especially the horn players, you know, you have to know how to read them. As we were recording with Capitol Records, and of course we had to, that came in very handy. And I even arranged the string parts for one of the songs that we had some string players do some backup parts for one of the songs that we did.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. So what led into your getting involved with the Charles Schulz and the Peanuts and writing the score? Or I don't know if you're a writer or a arranger, but what?
Kind of luck. We moved from L.A. to... first to Central California, then to Northern California in Santa Rosa. And that's where Charles Schulz lives. And he has his own ice rink there. And so I started doing some arrangements and some special recordings for him. Because at that point, I had a little studio in my apartment. And I would write for their ice shows. Using a reel-to-reel tape and, you know, cutting, slicing and then taping it back together. It was really something. That's old school. And so I started doing that for him. And then he came up to me and said, you know, I'm going to be doing a TV special, and it's going to be a live action, but the only animated character is going to be Snoopy's brother Spike. I want you to write the music for him. And said, yeah, that'd be great. So I spent about a year, I guess, doing that and putting together the music for it. And I did the music for that on a Macintosh. I think it was like a Mac Plus or something. Uh-huh. One of those little tiny guys.
Yeah.
But it could control MIDI instruments. And so then when it came time to recording all that, I brought the computer and the synthesizers and then that all that to the recording studio, and we recorded all of the music for that. And then once that was recorded, Charles Schulz would take me along in his private jet, and we would fly down to Hollywood for a meeting with the producers and the director, and see, you know, he was saying, you know, this is how he wants it done, and this is where the music goes, and all this stuff, and then we would fly back that, you know, to Santa Rosa that afternoon. It was really kind of a heady experience. It was really something to be able to do that.
Everybody thinks of you know that certain sound of a Peanuts show with a Vince Guaraldi. Kind of is so prevalent in Peanuts. Did you have to kind of follow that sound in some way?
No. It really was more of a typical background music for a TV show you would hear, you know, like an action TV show you would hear anywhere. But we did have to do the Snoopy theme. Actually, I think it's called Linus theme. The one that you hear all the time.
Yeah. I think it's called Linus and Lucy.
Linus and Lucy, that's right. That's right. So I did have to record that. And so I had my keyboard player and just sat down and recorded that. So we had that to play because... Snoopy actually appears at the very beginning. He's reading a letter from his brother Spike, and so when Snoopy appears, that song plays. So that had to be in there. I didn't have to follow his compositional styles, which is fine because I really wanted to kind of expand to like a more of a full. Not orchestra, but a full band sound.
So you were really, I mean, at this time, were you a full-time musician?
No. In fact, okay. I spent a year on the road, 1982 to 83, being a full-time musician.
Is this with the trend?
No. This is actually as myself, and I worked on a cruise ship for a while, for like 4 months, and then after that, I got a job doing this show called The Hollywood Follies, and we did 2 months in Fort Lauderdale, and then in Miami, I think Miami. And then 3 months in Europe with that show. And so that was about a year's worth of touring. And I thought, at that point, I was like 30 years old, 29 years old. And I thought, I think I don't want to tour, or I don't want to be on the road very much at all. So I stuck close to home. I did guitar lessons. But I also got into computers and started doing some computer work for a couple of companies. And, but it was always kind of, music and something else. The music really, except for that 1 year on the road, the music really was not a good provider at that point. Come to think of it, it hasn't been since a full-time provider of income for me. That's because I always had a day job that I could fall back on, the graphic designer. But I didn't want to do just anything in music. I had friends, a couple friends of mine who played at Disneyland. And this is way back. They were friends from high school. And so back in the 70s, they were playing in Disneyland. I thought, oh, man, I got to talk to them afterwards after their set. And I said, oh, man, you must be having a great time. You're playing at Disneyland. And it was great. And they said, yeah, it's not so great. You got to play the same songs exactly the same way, like three times a day.
They're
creatively, they were burnt. They weren't able to do anything, so it paid the bills.
Yeah,
but I didn't want to just pay the bills. I could do that with anything, so I didn't go after those kinds of things. And I mean, I probably could have, but I didn't want to be one of those musicians who got burnt out on music. I wanted to have music be kind of a life source for me. So I would only do stuff that I wanted to do.
Well, you certainly aren't playing the same thing every three times a day or every day. You've got so many different styles and genres that you cover here. We're going to take a break and come back with Paul Rodriguez, and we're going to talk about this song called "The DNA Game." We're going to go back to your roots, Paul, and it's a brilliant song about. Growing up as Paul Rodriguez.
Uno, dos. With a name like Rodriguez, thought I knew from where I came. I knew in the mix was Mexico. Beyond that, more of the same, I guess. Throw in a few Aztec uncles. Dreams can make you insane. Getting a jump on diseases. I thought I'd play the DNA game. answer. Delivery right to my door. I should have called for a neighbor to pick me up from the floor. Said I'm part African, some great, 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 great relative. Maybe he or she was a singer in a local Nigerian band. I'm also part Iberian, that didn't surprise me at all. But then comes Baltic and Central Asian, it's hard to keep track of them all. There's one more thing I should tell you. Really caught me off guard. I felt a sense of humanity, and the world was in my backyard. We are all connected. Something we should proclaim. So gather some drool and remember, it's time to play the DNA game.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here with Paul Rodriguez. So, Paul, this song is off of your most recent album?
Yes. And I think it was recorded in 2018 or 2019. At that point, I was not really looking to create an album. I was, happy playing with my two bands and, things were going fine. A guy who used to work for A&M Records happened to move in the area, and he heard Polarized Guru playing in the down the street. And he had just moved from L.A., but he was like a real hotshot producer at A&M Records. He was a producer with Sting and with Janet Jackson and lots of other people. But he heard the music coming down the street, so he came in. And he crashed the party that we were at, and he introduced himself, and so we got to know each other, and then we continued to kind of meet with each other for a few times, and we were talking initially about doing an album for Polarized Guru, but I thought, I think the better fit is for me to do my own album, and to have him as a producer on this would be phenomenal, because he's worked with some great people. And so that's how that collaboration got started. And we went to go ahead and record this album locally in Framingham at Red 13 Studios with an amazing engineer, Sean Lichtenstein. So this is one of the songs that came up. It's interesting because, I'm not a regular songwriter. I might write a song here or there, but I had to come up with seven songs for this album. And I had a couple that were kind of that I resurrected from before. But this one came to me because just prior to recording the album, I had Nance and I, my wife, had our DNA tested to see where we originated way back when. And I thought it was very interesting, and interesting enough to write a song about it.
Yeah, apparently. Well, apparently your DNA has some interesting aspects to it as well.
Yeah. It was kind of funny the way it all kind of turned out. But when I was writing songs for this album, I'm in my 60s at that point, and writing love songs is just, it was kind of boring to me at that point to do that, to write a love song in the age of 60. I mean, I could have, but I was more interested in writing songs that were kind of interesting and not about love. So I had to write about this DNA thing that we had done, and I called it the DNA game because it seemed like a game to me.
There's a world music feel to this, I guess it's kind of, is it a, could you qualify this as a Mexican rhythm, or is it more South American?
That's what's interesting, because I'm not an expert in Latin rhythms. I just do what I do. And when I was growing up as a kid, before I even learned how to play guitar, my parents were playing all kinds of music in the house. There were some traditional Mexican music, some mariachi music, some pop music from Mexico at the time. But also they were listening to Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and all of these great tunes that everybody was listening to, and so I had a great upbringing of being surrounded by all kinds of music, and so when I kind of developed my own Latin style, I had a feeling for it, but I wasn't studying any particular part of Latin music, and that's what came out in this. I wanted it to be, since he was talking about Mexico and Rodriguez, and I thought it's got to be a Latin song of some kind, and so it'll be the Rodriguez Latin version of the song, and Nance actually sings on it at the end, and
it must have been just fun to write this as well.
I mean, there's
kind of humor in here, and exactly,
and then. And then the last verse just kind of brought it all together and kind of showed kind of how we're all kind of part of the same family and how the world is actually quite small, and we can really be in touch with each other, no matter what nationality or what country we come from. Because I was kind of shocked when I saw. I have an ancestor from Nigeria, from way back, and also from Central Asia and the Baltic, and it's just like that's wild. That's wild. I mean, it was a teeny tiny part, but still, that's somewhere along the line, somebody married somebody, and that's what came out.
Yeah. Well, and it shows how much global interaction there was even back, centuries and centuries ago. So it seems like this song almost wrote itself. There's a fluidity, and it seems to really speak to, it's conversational, and it seems like you were just smiling the whole time you wrote this down.
Yeah.
Did your song scoring experience, did you utilize that like that? It's a beautiful flute solo in the middle there. Did you write that solo out, or did you just leave that to
the
flautist?
I had a wonderful flautist who who was local at the time, and she really nailed it.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, if I, you know, reach over and grab the album, I could tell you, but who she was, her name is, no, I'm thinking of someone else. I can't quite think of her name right now, but she was an amazing, she is an amazing player, and perfect for this song. And so, yeah, when we were recording this, we just got, kept doing take after take of her solo. I was just like, yeah, do another one. It's really great. So she kept putting out these gems of solos, and we just picked the best one. It was really, she's just an amazing player.
Sounds like that was a hard decision to make. Can we get two solos in here?
right. So that was that, and then also the backup vocals. I wanted to be kind of interesting, and it's really just kind of ba ba da ba ba da ba ba da da. And harmonies and it's just kind of that goes back to my Al Jarreau past. So that's how I learned. He was one of my favorite singers, and it kind of has that scat singing quality to it.
It almost has a mariachi band feel to it.
Yes, and especially at the end. Especially at the end, because at the end I added some crowd noise so that it was like a party going on, and then I had Nance do a little part in there. I don't know if you heard it, but it's a little bit in the background, but it's her doing an operatic voice, and then she giggles at the end of it. And this is like, this is perfect. Yeah, you'll leave that in there. That's great.
I like the way, you talk about all your background, and it's reminding me of Tiger Woods here. And remember, he had, when he first became well-known, everybody was trying to define what his race was. And he said he was Cambodian, if you remember. He was Cambodian. He's got a whole bunch of things going on. And and it sounds like as you yourself are with a lot of these, even though they may be generations or centuries ago, we're still all a mix of so much. And I like the way you pull it all together, though, because we really are. We're all just one. We're all connected. But I love to gather some drool and remember. I mean, there's a lot of humor. Pick me up off the floor. It really is a lot of fun. The whole sound of the song is just fun. Have you played this live?
Not with a band, but as a solo, I will do that. And one of these days it might just be a band that plays this, but it has like two or three backup singers in there, and then you need to have enough people to play this song. And so I've always just done it as a solo. Maybe Nance will join me on it with the choruses, I wanted that. I really like doing the kind of the party feel at the end of it. With the scat backup singers and then the crowd noise and Nance doing her operatic voice, and it seemed like that it would be fun to do it like that. I do have a music video that I've done, actually two music videos. I did one that was just a straight studio thing where we just kind of focus on different players in the band. That was done at Red 13 Studios. But also I did a home version called the DNA Game, I think the acoustic version, And so a little more acoustic, but it's got basically the same stuff in it. And I did recorded me doing it here, but also used some stock video footage of things that I thought would be really interesting to see. So I can send you the links to that, it was fun to do that.
Send me the link. We'll just add it onto the website, or I don't think I can add a link to the podcast, but I can add it to the website. I want to listen to this at the end here. It's kind of a street party going on.
Yeah, and it reminds me too of when I was growing up, we always had parties with other families, the kids running around and the parents all, the music was playing, they'd be dancing and laughing, and yeah, so I was really trying to recreate that sense of people getting together and having a great time.
Yeah. It seems like whenever I'm like in the city in Boston or New York and I see one of these ethnic street festivals going on, it seems like everybody knows how to party better than Americans. we're just so boring compared to everyone else.
Yeah, I just wanted to this whole song, I just wanted it to be fun. I was just trying to pulling things out of my hat here and there, left and right, and so it was fun to do this. I'm glad that it happened, and I'm glad I was able to put this all together as part of the album. And now my daughter Sarah, she's 25 now, and as a concert photographer in New York City, she now has this album is something that I can leave for her to have, and I even wrote a song about her when she first started college. So it's an album that in the past I didn't do any albums because I didn't want to have 1,000 copies of the CD sitting in my closet for 10 years and wondering what to do with them. I wasn't really that good at marketing and promoting and selling them. So when this opportunity came up, and it came up to be able to work with a great producer like Mark Mazzetti, I thought, well, if I'm going to do an album, I better do it now. Because this is the... And I had the ability to do it. I had the time to do it. So I spent a lot of time on this, but I'm very proud of it, and I'm glad that I can leave this for my daughter. So it was really something that needed to be done, for my own kind of creative sanity.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm glad I did it.
The album was originally called More Roads Ahead, More Road Ahead.
Well, then in 2020, I signed with a company, a music company, that was not your typical record company. What they did is they really kind of sold music to companies who needed to play music, like at their stores and on the airlines and whatever. And so I was part of that company. But I was signed with them. And at that point they said, we don't do cover songs. So I had to record three more originals to make up for the three cover songs that I had on the album, because I wanted it to still be a full album. And we renamed it, One, which is the title song now of that album, and that's where you would probably most find it. If you wanted to, get an actual CD, I can give you one. But the online, it is One is the name of the album, and you'll be able to find it on Spotify, Apple Music, and all those places.
Uh-huh. And as Paul Rodriguez, or as the Paul Rodriguez Band, or how is
as Paul Rodriguez, yeah. The ideal is to be able to make $1 million with your album and be famous. That really wasn't my concern. I just wanted to make a quality product that that you could stand the test of time. Meaning, I was not like you did your album. You didn't want anything to kind of get you later on. We said, "Oh, I wish I had done this differently." I spent a lot of time on this, making sure that I didn't have any of those sections in there where I wanted to do it differently.
I still have plenty of those.
it was a real treat to be able to have the time to put into this. I was retired already, so it was just like, I got all kinds of time. Let's really make this perfect, and it's exactly what I wanted in it. Right. I had great musicians to play on it. So.
That's great, Paul. Your website,
PaulRodriguez.net.
PaulRodriguez.net, and RODRIGUEZ, right?
Right.
Well, Paul, I thank you for being a part of this. You and I, we keep passing each other, and I'll tell you, I learned more about you than I even knew existed. you got a lot behind you. My respect and adulation has increased even more so. Wow. A lot of really neat things and always, quality musicianship. And he's a nice guy too. I seem to recall.
The times that we played together, the few times that we played together, has always been fun because you know what you're doing. So it's really fun to kind of get together and play.
It's all an act, but it is fun. Yeah. All right, Paul. Well, thank you very much. Right. Remember, PaulRodriguez.net and super interview, Paul. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Take care of yourself.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, 96.7 FM. Please follow us on your favorite podcast site, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon. And please just tell one or two of your friends about this series so that we can grow our audience. You can find links to all our past guests. And if you'd like to hear more of my own music, check out steverobb.com or search me out on Spotify and Apple Music. Thanks for listening, and until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart.